This is a Just Verdicts Trial Nugget, produced and powered by Law Pods.
Welcome back to Just Verdicts Trial Nuggets edition. And this is going to be probably at this point a somewhat delayed second part of the punitive damages nuggets that I wanted to discuss. Last time we talked about Lanier's approach to punitives. And today we're going to be talking about Shane Inspector's punitive damage argument in the Goretzka versus Penn Power case from several years ago. And just kind of a cool full circle, because I sat through a lot of that trial because it was here in Allegheny County many years ago, and watched Shannon try this with Kyla, and Dom have since been interviewed on Just Verdicts. Didn't know them at the time. It was kind of just in awe of that three lawyer team trying a case of that magnitude. Horrible case of this mom, out in the suburbs, getting hit with a power line that fell on top of her. There had been prior power lines that had fallen in their yard. Just a horrible case and a horrible death and loss for the family. And obviously a significant opportunity for punitive damages. And one thing I thought was really cool and just goes to how a lot of true great trial lawyers are ready and able to help. So I thought I had this transcript. I think at some point I did, that I had gotten it, but I couldn't find it. And so I emailed Shane Inspector a few days ago asking if by chance he could get me the transcript so I could see and talk about his punitive damages argument. And right away, he got his assistant to go dig it up, and they sent it to me, and now I have it and can share it with you. So it's a similar, you'll see in some regards, argument to what Lanier made, but different. And I'll talk about that after I read the actual argument to you. But I think the key in these cases is the analogy. And that's somewhat of the similarity. Shannon approaches a little bit different, which I think it's always interesting to listen to different great lawyers' approaches and then kind of seeing, which of these approaches works best for you and take from that, make it your own, that kind of thing. So without any further ado, let's dive into the actual transcript. Now, this closing was like 3 hours long, and kind of one of the funny parts was Avram Levikoff, who was the lawyer for the power company, he gave a closing that was like 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I remember Shannon getting up and putting his watch like literally on the jury well stand there and basically telling the jury that he was going to try to not go longer than Attorney Levikoff. And I think that he did not do that. I think he went like 3 hours, went longer. And I think actually Judge Della Vecchia, who was presiding over it, made some type of funny comment after Spector finished, essentially to the effect of like, leave it to trial lawyers to point out how long one went, only to then go longer themselves. And the jury laughed. It was a good moment on a long day. But still, it was a tremendous closing argument. And I think this punitive section is very helpful and worth listening to and potentially incorporating into your case if you have punitive. So here we go. Then you have to decide whether West Penn Power's conduct was outrageous, which, as I say, is recklessness. I don't have anything more to say to you on the topic of whether it was reckless. Respectfully, I believe we've thoroughly proven the reckless indifference to the safety of others. But if you find it was reckless, outrageous, you have to decide how much to award. And His Honor will tell you that when you decide how much to award, you have to consider several things. You have to consider the reprehensibility of the conduct, its nature. You have to consider fixing an amount that will be a deterrent to them and to others. And you know that your verdict is going to speak very loudly, very loudly. What you say is going to be heard. It will be heard. And we are required to show you the net worth of the company as part of that. That's why we had to reopen the case yesterday. You saw that number was $244 million. I don't know how they get to a number like that on a public utility, which is a monopoly. But that's apparently the number that they publish. That's just West Penn's net worth. And that should not be considered by you in deciding how much to award to compensate. Whether they're worth $1 or $20 billion is irrelevant to what is there to compensate the family for what happened. It's an entirely separate issue, and whatever resources they have to pay is not your concern. It's not your concern on damages to compensate. It is relevant on damages to punish. I think it's very difficult to consider $244 million and to decide what is fair from looking at that as the net worth of the company, because I don't think any of us deal with numbers like $244 million every day. So I would suggest to you that we put aside their net worth and we think about them as a person who is not a wealthy person, but who did a very bad thing, just as bad as what West Penn Power did here. And just so we're clear, this case is not about Jill DeAngelo. It's about all of them. It's about Haven Bearley and Jill DeAngelo and the trainers and the people above them who didn't supervise and all of those who went into these decisions not to examine evidence of failures, learn from them, prevent this from happening, from not checking on grounding and all the rest of it, to not using the infrared, not doing all the things they should have done to protect people in this community. Imagine a person did all of those things and his beautiful woman was taken from the earth for that senseless reason. And you have to decide how much money to take from that person because jail wasn't an option. Oh, and by the way, I left something out that I needed to say. I'm obligated to argue only from the evidence. I can't say anything beyond the evidence, but you heard the evidence in this case that the day of or the day after this tragedy, the Public Utility Commission asked West Penn Power, when are we going to get your final report on what happened here? We want to know why this line fell again. Remember that email? We want to know why this line fell again. They knew the line had fallen before. They knew the line had fallen again. I guess that had been transmitted to them in that initial communication. A year and a half later, the evidence was they still hadn't sent that final investigation report to the PUC. And the reason that I bring that up to you is to highlight for you how you are it. You're it. Because there has been such a failure here at West Penn Power. They have not been held accountable for what they've done. They're able to get away with not reporting to the PUC for at least a year and a half. So it all rests with you. With you. Okay, back to where I was. So the person is only, they act so reprehensibly, they cause Carrie Goretzka's death. They have only $10 to their name. Just the one Andrew Hamilton. This is their net worth. And note that Attorney Spector at this point literally pulls out the money. He sets the $10 bill on the table right in front of the jury. In fact, this is their worth. This is what they have in their pocket. And you are called upon to decide how much you're going to take from them in order to punish them for the reprehensible thing that they did and deter them and others from this kind of conduct. So what are the options available to you? A fairly wide range. You could take a penny from this person who is worth $10, and you have to ask yourself, will that punish and deter him? What will the person say who is worth $10 from whom you've taken a penny? I suggest to you, respectfully, they would brush the award off their shoulder like lint. Let's say that you take a dime from them. They have $10 and you take a dime. What will they say? Well, it's more than lint off the shoulder, but not much more. Let's say that you take a dollar from them. That probably hurts. Now, I'm not suggesting that you take 10% from them, which is what a dollar would be, or 1%, which is what a dime will be, or 1/10 of 1%, which is what a penny would be. What I do suggest to you is the appropriate way of looking at this is to say, what would it be if it were a guy with $10? How much would that be to make him feel it, to make him not do it again? And then just do the math on that $244 million. That seems to be the most reasonable way of approaching that issue. When I tell you that, I recognize again that that is imperfect, but that's what the law requires, and they need to get the message. and getting the message is entirely separate from your award to compensate the Goreska family for her death. And then he goes back into other stuff at that point, but that's the gist of his punitive damages argument. So there's basically three, I think, key takeaways from that. Number one, simplify the law. So Spector clearly separated the compensatory damages from punitive damages. And that's a very big thing because a lot of jurors ask in focus groups and at trials, well, we already gave them money. Why do we have to give them more? And you've got to make that distinction that one is to compensate and one is to punish. Teaching the jury that this part of the case wasn't about paying the family, it's about punishing misconduct and deterring it from ever happening again. That clarity gives jurors permission to think about punishment without worrying they're giving a windfall. Number two, using a relatable analogy, you saw in both of these punitive damages that that simplification, that taking this monster number that is hard to conceptualize and simplifying it down into something that we're all familiar with. In Spector's case, a guy with $10 that did something really bad. And then asking what would hurt, a penny, a dime, a dollar, and then scaling it up. He gave the jury a mental model for proportional punishment without ever suggesting a dollar figure, which I think is great, because then you're not telling them what to do. You're giving them options and giving them the freedom to do what they think is right, giving them agency. Third and finally, he makes it a duty, not an option. Remember, Spector said there, you're it. He shifted the weight of accountability squarely onto the jury's shoulders. He framed punitive damages as necessary to keep the community safe, not just to punish this company, but to send a message to every company. And so I think that those three things are why this argument resonates. It was simple, it was principled, and it makes the jury feel like they're doing something important and are making change and hopefully preventing horrible things from happening in the future, because they are. And I think that's the lesson for all of us in our own trials. So I hope that was helpful. I got a ton out of it. It was good to take a walk down memory lane and reread, re-listen to that punitive damages argument, having been there in person when it was first given. And that ended up being, I think, $109 million verdict, $60 million thereabouts, I believe, was punitive damages. And you also saw what happened there with the $244 million. That company was worth way more than that. But I think the particular defendant was a subsidiary of the parent company. And I thought there was, you know, that one other clever point that Shannon pointed out. Whether they're worth $1 or $20 billion, it doesn't matter. So a lot of great stuff to take away there. I hope you got something out of it. If you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend, like, subscribe, or whatever we do with these podcasts these days. And thanks again for listening to another Just Verdicts Trial Nuggets with yours truly, Brendan Lupitzen. Talk to you soon.
If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to the Just Verdicts podcast on your favorite platform and consider leaving a review. And if you're interested in co-counseling, local counseling, or referring a catastrophic injury case, we'd love to work with you. Call us at 412-281-4100 or visit our attorney referral page at pamedmal.com/refer. Thanks for listening.